Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 231 event, which takes place in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, Kyle Marley won 3.75 units for UFC Fight Night 142 with his one-unit free bet on Mauricio Shogun Hua at plus 375 odds. Kyle has his bets and fantasy MMA picks available now on MMAoddsbreaker.com. Back to the present, UFC 231 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a light heavyweight contest between Devin Clark, who is 9-2, and Alexander Rakic, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Rakic opened minus 400, the comeback on Clark plus 280. And right now, over at our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu, we're currently seeing the line Rakic at minus 610, the comeback on Clark at plus 410. So, line margins have tightened up and, of course, more action coming in Rakic's way. So that tells you what kind of support and what kind of respect this guy's getting from the bettors out there, because Clark's no bum at all. I mean, he's a very solid fighter, and he's actually done a lot of good things at light heavyweight. But stylistically, this is kind of a tough matchup because Clark, even though he's got okay striking, I mean, his bread and butter is definitely out grappling his opponents, taking the fight to the floor, grinding you out a little bit, looking for that submission, looking for some ground and pound as well. He's going to have difficulties doing that against a guy like Rakic. Rakic has been nothing but impressive thus far. He's came into the UFC facing some solid competition. His win over Ledet last time was pretty impressive as well, because Ledet's, you know, a respectable striker that just moved down in weight class as well. So Rakic is the type of fighter, I think, that is going to continue to open up eyes. I mean, his length, his physicality, I mean, his ability to finish fights on the feet. I think he's got decent takedown defense as well. And then combine that all with the fact that Clark is hittable and his chin has let him down in the past as well. I think this is kind of catered towards a Rakic finish in this spot here. And that's exactly why you're seeing the line escalate like it did. So I'm in agreement with it. I think that Clark, like I said, he's a very solid fighter and he's going to win his share of fights in the light heavyweight division. No doubt about it, but unfortunately for him, just stylistically, this is a bad matchup. That's why, again, the betting line's going the way it is, and I think there's going to be some good things ahead for Rakic after this win. So my prediction is Rakic gets another finish here, and, you know, like I said, it's impressive highlight reel type of finish, and then he keeps on moving on to better things. So unfortunately for Clark, I don't think he gets it done. The pick is Rakic to win.
And I'm right with you here. Rakic has just a really strong kickboxing striking style, and Clark does have some powerful boxing, but I mean, on the feet, he is so outclassed, it's not even funny. I mean, Rakic just outboxed and outstruck dominantly Justin Ledet, a heavyweight who had a strong boxing background, who was undefeated in the UFC heavyweight division, dropping down a weight class, and Rakic just made mincemeat of him over the course of three rounds. Rakic has gone to decision in both of his UFC fights so far, but with Clark having some durability issues, getting knocked out by Alex Nicholson, I think Rakic is going to find that chin and put him away. And Clark's really only path to victory here is to get takedowns. He averages about 3 per fight, but Rakic has excellent takedown defense, 86%. I think he fends off the takedowns. He does have a little bit of a grappling background as well. So I think that he keeps this upright and just completely overwhelms Clark, eventually takes him out and gets the TKO finish. So Rakic is definitely my pick here. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Carlos Diego Ferreira, who is 13-2, taking on Kyle Nelson, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Ferreira opened up minus 425. The comeback on Nelson opened up at plus 305. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing line at about minus 500 for Ferreira. The comeback on Nelson around plus 365 or so. So line continuing to climb a little bit more from the opener. I mean, obviously Nelson's stepping in on short notice. He's stepping in for Runson. Unfortunately for Runson, man, I'm gutted by this for him because, you know, he made it back to the UFC actually after having a pretty solid showing in his first UFC run. I know he lost a lot of competitive decisions, but Ronson definitely deserves to be on the UFC roster. The guy is a heck of a striker, a heck of a fighter. I mean, a savvy vet as well. So I feel really bad that he wasn't able to with his weight cutting issues, I guess, or whatever. He came in a little bit too heavy, and that's why the UFC pulled him, because they didn't think it was safe for him to try to make weight because how heavy he was or whatnot. So Nelson steps in. And he's another solid fighter, man, that deserves this roster spot as well. So even though I'm gutted for Runson not making this fight against a very savvy and a heck of a fighter in Ferreira, Nelson stepping in, getting his opportunity, I think he deserves to do so. I mean, Kyle Nelson is a well-rounded fighter. He's a finisher on the feet. He has a ground game to go along with it. He's got decent takedown defense. This guy is no joke at all. But again, stepping in on short notice like he is against a very solid fighter in Ferreira. Ferreira is super well-rounded in his own right. He has a better ground game. He's got a wrestling advantage in most cases as well. So Ferreira is just a tough out, especially to make a new UFC debut. I mean, he was a solid favorite against Runson. He's an even bigger favorite against Nelson here for a reason. And I do think that Ferreira gets the job done here. Probably a finish as it goes. You know, maybe Nelson starts wearing down, slows down a little bit. Ferreira gets it to the ground and maybe finishes him there. I think on the feet, it's going to be a firefight. But Ferreira actually, I think, is a little bit worse defensively. So he has to be careful. That's definitely Kyle Nelson's best path to victory, is knocking and catching Ferreira out on the feet. I think it's possible for him to do that, although I think it's a little bit unlikely in this spot here as well. So I think it's one of those cases that you got to give Nelson a puncher's chance for sure. Puncher or kicker, we should say, in this fact. But that being said, I think more times than not, Ferreira gets this fight, like I said, to the ground eventually. As the fight progresses, Nelson may be starting to slow down a little bit, and Ferreira finds his way to a finish or a competitive but clear-cut unanimous decision win for Ferreira as well. So tough debut for Nelson, but I do think after this fight, win or lose, he's going to be able to, you know, get back in there and probably start winning some fights depending on how they match him, because the guy is no joke. So like I said, I have respect for Nelson. I just think that this fight's a bad stylistical matchup, especially on short notice for him as well. So I'm going to pick Ferreira to win.
Yeah, real tough fight for Nelson on super short notice. I mean, he is actually the third opponent for Carlos Diego Ferreira after Jesse Ronson fell through as well. So, very difficult matchup. I mean, the main thing here is Nelson is, I would say, a very good striker with a lot of power. I mean, three of his wins on his current win streak have been by knockout or TKO. And Carlos Diego Ferreira, while he is a decent striker and an excellent, excellent grappler, he did get knocked out badly by Dustin Poirier. So, if Nelson can connect with something solid, I think that there is a puncher's chance here. But other than that, I think he's in big, big trouble. I mean, you look at the way Carlos Diego Ferreira has performed since suffering that setback loss to Poirier. And, I mean, he looked amazing against Olivier Aubin-Mercier, just completely dominated him. And then in his last fight, he took on Jared Gordon and just throttled him. And Gordon is known to be for his toughness and being a really good, scrappy fighter. So Carlos Diego Ferreira is definitely on the rise right now in the lightweight division. And I think, an opponent, even if he's on a strong six-fight win streak like Kyle Nelson, it's just he's going to get overwhelmed with how short notice he's taking this fight. He's going to have Canada behind him. He's Canadian. And he's got the puncher's chance, but I think that's it. And if this fight goes to the floor, I think he's in big, big trouble. So my pick is Ferreira, probably by submission. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Chad Laprise, who is 14-3, taking on Diego Lima, who is 14-7. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Laprise opened minus 285, the comeback on Lima plus 205. And right now over at BetDSI, we're seeing Laprise at minus 385, the comeback on Lima plus 285. So line margins again have tightened up. More action coming in Laprise's way. And a lot of that is to do with Lima's chin, honestly. And just his underwhelming ability to perform good in the octagon so far. I mean, outside of the UFC, outside of the Ultimate Fighter, I guess we should say, because on the Ultimate Fighter show, man, the guy excels. The guy is definitely a gamer. And I mean, he shows some of his skill set against solid competition on the Ultimate Fighter as well. But then once he gets into the actual octagon and, you know, away from the Ultimate Fighter, he just hasn't had success. It's unfortunate for him. He's a pretty good fighter. He's going to have a reach advantage over Laprise. Diego Lima is a really good striker. He's got a really solid ground game to go along with it. So there's a lot to like in his game, but again, it's that chin that lets him down at times and his ability to fend off takedowns against really solid wrestlers as well. So I don't know. I mean, I think the line right now is a bit too high, honestly, because I think Laprise has his own flaws and, you know, especially defensively at times. And we've seen him get clipped on the feet as well. So if this is a firefight, I definitely trust Laprise's chin. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if this comes down to chins, I do think Laprise has a better chin than Lima. But what I'm saying is that the striking should be back and forth a little bit. I do think that Laprise will outpoint Lima on the feet. And then again, if this fight goes to the ground, even though Lima has good jiu-jitsu skill, I think Laprise probably gets top position, and his fight IQ and his ground defense is pretty decent as well. So I am going to pick Laprise to win this fight. I think he should outpoint Lima here if he doesn't get clipped by anything on the feet. Or like I said, I think if they get into it and they get into a stand-up war, I think Laprise's chin probably holds up a little bit better than Lima. But I do think, again, the line is a little bit too high in comparison, because I think this is going to be a little bit more competitive than people think. And man, I would like to see just something click for Lima and you know, him start rolling and get picking up some wins. I mean, obviously his brother in Bellator gets a ton of respect from MMA, you know, the bettors out there in the community in general, because he's such a stud fighter. So it's unfortunate for me to see, you know, Diego kind of not having that kind of success. So him getting on a roll, I wouldn't mind seeing. But I just, unfortunately for him, I think it's going to be another setback, another loss here. And we probably see him get cut from the roster. So not a good thing. But like I said, if you're going to bet this fight, I would not lay the juice. It's probably a dog or pass situation in my mind. So better to pass it than anything else. So my pick is Laprise, though. I think, like I said, he outpoints him or maybe possibly finds that chin and, you know, puts him out as well. So the pick is Laprise to win.
I can completely understand why Laprise is favored. He is the better, more technical striker of the two. He's fighting in his home turf. And Lima's biggest strength, his submission grappling, usually comes when he can secure top position. And he's just not a great wrestler. And he doesn't usually get top position against really good fighters. And Chad Laprise definitely has the defensive grappling to avoid that situation. Nick said, you know, Laprise might shoot for takedown. I think that'd be a huge mistake. You know, why even risk it? You know, Lima could catch him in a triangle or armbar or something. Just keep it standing and outwork Diego Lima. Laprise has a good output on the feet. He has you know, he basically outlands Lima 2-1 in terms of how often he throws strikes. He is by far the superior defensive striker as well. His striking defense is like 64% compared to 50 for Lima. He absorbs about the same. I mean, just in general, Laprise is just way better on the feet. And it just seems like the longer he stays standing with Lima, the better the chance is that he finds Lima's chin and puts him away. Now, both of these guys have had a bit of durability issues. Laprise was knocked out badly at lightweight and then had a bit of a run here at welterweight and got knocked out as well. And Lima has had a really bad history of getting knocked out. So I would say that even though Laprise has had a couple knockout losses, Lima's chin is definitely way worse. And Laprise's striking technique should be good enough to make up for that, and his defense. So I just don't think Diego Lima is a competent enough technical striker. He basically would have to get a little lucky here to land that big shot before Laprise does. So my pick is going to be Chad Laprise. I think he gets the job done. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Brad Katona, who is 8-0, taking on Matthew Lopez, who is 10-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Katona opens minus 215, the comeback on Lopez at plus 165. We're right now looking over at BetDSI. It's minus 185 for Katona. The comeback on Lopez is at plus 155. So a lot of margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming in this fight. A little bit more action coming in Lopez's way here. Ultimate Fighter winner Katona, man. I'll tell you what, this guy is definitely a solid fighter. And, you know, he's an up and coming fighter as well. He's only 26 years old. He's only going to improve. He's got a well-rounded game in his own right. I mean, of course, most people look at Katona and they think of his grappling ability, his ground fighting ability as well, which, you know, I mean, you got to look at that because that's kind of his blueprint a lot of times to victory. But at the same time, he also, displayed some solid striking ability. And I think it's only going to improve, as he progresses in his, you know, career. So this guy is a very capable all-around fighter and an undefeated fighter that's, again, coming in with a lot of confidence after winning the Ultimate Fighter. Lopez, on the other hand, it's almost disappointing with him because he's got a ton of skill. I mean, this guy, talk about wrestling. I mean, Lopez has outstanding wrestling. He's a grinder. He's got good grappling ability. He's got pretty good stand-up ability as well, meaning offensively, the guy has some power. And he's, you know, if he gets into a firefight on the feet a lot of times, you got to be careful with him because he does, you know, definitely present some problems with his finishing ability even on the feet. But his chin, the last two fights have definitely let him down. And that is a concern. So defensively and conditioning at times as well with Lopez is what you're concerned with, and you should be here as well. So I think this is a winnable fight for both guys, honestly. I think Lopez could come out here. If his conditioning holds and his chin holds, he can win this fight. There's no question about it. And Katona is not necessarily the most feared one-punch power, you know, knockout artist in the weight class, for sure. That's for sure. So it's possible. But again, I think Katona, as the fight progresses, though, will probably put the pace on Lopez a little bit more. And I just find it hard to trust Lopez at this point because how many times we've seen his conditioning be flawed. And as the fight progresses a little bit, he does turn to slow down. Katona's going to probably be able to stuff some of those takedown attempts from Lopez. And again, I think he just basically will start out pointing Lopez as the fight progresses a little bit and maybe finishes him late in the fight as well. So I think this is, again, a winnable fight for both guys because I do think Lopez is a talented fighter. But as of right now, he's just been a disappointment to me on the UFC roster. So with that said, I like the confidence and I like the young blood of Katona coming in here and getting a solid, you know, after his Ultimate Fighter win, getting a solid first regular normal type of fight in the UFC over a very solid opponent as well. So I think, again, sky's the limit for Katona. He's only going to continue to improve, and I'm going to pick him to win this fight over Lopez.
Yeah, what's really interesting in this fight is I actually see Matthew Lopez winning the first round. Lopez has an excellent ground game, good power on the feet, pushes a really strong pace. His biggest issue is durability and conditioning. I mean, he just consistently slows down in fights and then gets overwhelmed the second he starts to gas. And you just don't see that very often in the lower weight classes, but Matthew Lopez has one of the worst gas tanks of anybody 155 pounds and lower. I mean, it's shocking to see how often this guy starts strong in fights and then just completely falls apart. I mean, it's happened with him time and time and time again. So, basically, if Lopez can't finish Katona in the first round, he's going to lose this fight, I think. Katona's durable. Katona pushes a good pace. Katona has pretty good defense, striking and on the ground. I just like this guy. He's a talented fighter. And even though he's not like an absolute killer, the main thing here is, will he get finished in the first round? And I just don't think he will. And Lopez is going to expend a lot of energy trying to put him away. And when that doesn't happen, I think Katona turns the tables on him. And I don't know if Katona can put Lopez away, but I think that he does at least enough to win the last two rounds, outworks Lopez, starts fending off takedowns. Lopez starts looking like a fish out of the water a little bit, starts swinging wildly and just eating shots. And I think Katona just clearly outworks him and easily wins the last two rounds, potentially gets a finish, and gets that victory along the way. So my pick is going to be Brad Katona. I really like this kid, and I think he has a bright future. Now, moving on to the first fight on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a middleweight contest between Elias Theodoro, who is 16-2, and Eric Anders, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Anders opened minus 165, the comeback on Theodoro at plus 125. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, we are seeing Theodoro actually favored minus 120, the comeback on Anders at minus 110. So immediately the action started coming in on Theodoro and line flipped over. And now we're starting to see some action come back in towards Anders as well. So there is two reaction in this fight, a lot of split opinions on this fight as well. And it should be a close one, man. I mean, you definitely have two solid fighters, two guys that, in my opinion, at 185 are definitely solid outs or solid up and coming fighters that can, you know, obviously eventually get where they want to be and keep, continue to climb the ladder with solid wins. And this is going to go a long way to do that for the winner here. So this is an important fight for Anders and Theodoro if they want to get in, eventually climb up that ladder and get in that title mix. And both of them, again, are talented fighters that can beat most people at 185. There's no question about it. Anders, of course, coming off of that, man, a hard fought battle. I mean, to Santos, that loss was just, I mean, it was a grueling fight. He ended up, you know, not coming out with a W there, but I mean, he showed a lot of good in that fight as well. Cause Santos is just a, I mean, a heck of a fighter to deal with, as we've seen time and time again. And we're going to get into his fight later on as well. So that's not necessarily a horrible loss. And I mean, we've, of course, we've seen Theodoro lose to that same fighter as well. So these guys have a common opponent and common loss, to the hands of Thiago Santos. So, but in that situation, you know, I mean, these guys again are different type of fighters though. Eric Anders is the type of guy that's going to come push a pace on you. He's got good boxing. He's got powerful punches. He's a grinder. He's a wrestler. He's able to get the fight to the ground as well. And you know, dictate and control the pace of this fight. He does have a bit of a ground game to go along with it. So he's, you know, no slouch at all. And obviously Theodoro, a lot of the same. I mean, he's got good takedown defense. He's got decent striking, a little bit unorthodox with Theodoro striking. I mean, I think his best attribute on the feet is actually his kicking game. When he's able to move around and get those kicks and those legs going, he can be very effective. And again, with takedown defense at times, you know, it's hard to kind of deal with him because he is a strong fighter at 185 as well. I just think how this is going to play out, Anders' boxing is going to be enough to probably get him through this fight, because I think his hand speed and his power and his ability to push forward is going to make Theodoro be on his back foot, counter with some punches and kicks. And again, the takedown game of Anders, maybe pushing him up against the cage, holding him there, stalling a little bit, because Theodoro is not going to be easy to take down, but I think Anders can mix in a couple takedowns, even if he can't hold him down for a long period of time either. So I think what we're going to see here is Anders actually outpoint Theodoro in a very competitive back and forth type of fight and get the W here. So it is intriguing. It's a very close fight. Pick'em seems about right in a way, but I do think the advantage kind of lies to Anders. And I think the opening line was actually a little bit more appropriately set than what we're currently seeing now. But again, competitive fight. I could realistically see it playing out either way. I mean, it's one of these cases where I think the person that has a great day and performs more towards his ability and, you know, his capabilities is going to win this fight. So with that said, more times than not, I think it's going to be Anders doing so. So I'm going to pick him to win.
Yeah. And I have to side with Anders here as well. I mean, Elias Theodoro is a guy that pushes forward and he's durable and he's pretty good at everything, but he's not really great at anything either. I mean, the best thing he has going for him is his hair. And other than that, I mean, he's not a terrific striker. He's not a terrific wrestler. He doesn't have devastating ground and pound. He doesn't have a particularly great submission game. He doesn't have a lot of power. I mean, there's just nothing about him that just screams, you know, that he should be a top player in the middleweight division. And he's been able to mostly pick up wins by just pushing a pretty good pace and overwhelming some people that just can't keep up with him. But when he faces guys that have very talented, strong technical striking and can stay upright, he gets in a lot of trouble. I mean, you look at the Thiago Santos fight, Theodoro, I mean, he started that fight thinking that he could hang with him on the feet and he just got lit up in that fight. And I think what happens here is, Theodoro is going to be giving up the technical striking to Eric Anders. He's going to be giving up the power to Eric Anders. Eric Anders is the better athlete of the two. Eric Anders might be the better wrestler of the two. I'm not 100% convinced of that, but I don't think Theodoro's wrestling is good enough to consistently keep Anders on the defensive, whether pushed against the fence or fending off takedowns. There's just nothing that Theodoro does in this fight that I see as a big threat. You know, Anders isn't going to be scared at all of Theodoro's striking, his kicking game, anything. So Anders can be pretty confident to just kind of walk Theodoro down a little bit. And I see Anders sitting down on his punches, just landing heavy shots. I don't know if he can knock Theodoro out. I mean, he does have a pretty good chin. He's durable. I mean, he goes to decision almost every one of his fights. So, I think what happens here is Anders just lands the better strikes. He lands the more powerful strikes. He doesn't get hit as often as Theodoro does. And, over the course of three rounds, he just does a little bit better and outpoints Theodoro and impresses the judges more than what Theodoro does, because there's just not a lot that Theodoro's going to do in this fight that I view as impressive. Anders, you know, did get knocked out in his last fight, but, you know, that was late in the fourth round against the same guy that just tore up Theodoro. So I think Anders has a bounce back performance here. I think he looks good. And I think Eric Anders probably wins by one-sided decision. So Anders is going to be my pick. Now dropping down to the women's flyweight division, we have Caitlin Chookagian, who is 11-1, taking on Jessica Ai, who is 13-6 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Chookagian open -265, the comeback on Ai at +185. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, we're seeing Chookagian sitting at -205, the comeback on Ai at +165. So line margins have tightened up. The line did drop to like 150, 160, 170, somewhere around there. For Chookagian, now it's climbing back up as well. So it looks like a fair opening line set here. And, you know, like I said, two-way action coming into this fight for sure. Not a lot of respect for Jessica Ai out there. You know, and I'm not really surprised. It seems like in most people's opinion, or in most cases, it seems like Jessica Ai is almost like the evil villain or whatnot. You know, at a lot of times in the fights, a lot of people will pick against her. And for some reason, you either love hate type of situation, I think, with Jessica Ai, and especially in her bantamweight run. I mean, she fought a lot of really solid competition and she had a lot of close decision losses amongst that. So I think a lot of fans out there were like, why is she still on roster or whatnot? I tell you what, she's a very talented fighter. She's proven that since she dropped down to her weight class of 125. That was a weight class she belonged in from the start. Unfortunately for her, it just wasn't around at the beginning of her UFC career. So that's why you're seeing her have a little bit more success, her confidence levels back. And man, I tell you what, like I said, don't underestimate Jessica. She's a very capable and talented fighter. That said, Chookagian is definitely a very solid fighter in her own right, and I do think she should be favored in this fight. I think she's probably a little bit more well-rounded than Jessica Ai, minus the wrestling aspect of things. I think that's where it's going to be intriguing here, is the ability to mix things up. Both these ladies like to stand and bang a little bit. They have capabilities of beating or outpointing their opponent on the feet. I do think Chookagian will probably get the better of the striking, only because we've seen Jessica Ai's striking defense be a little bit flawed. Both of these ladies don't have exactly a tremendous amount of punching power either. I mean, they're capable of doing some damage for sure, and you can't take them lightly, but I think more so than not, they kind of will sit there and outstrike each other, meaning outpoint each other or whatever, or try to do that. So I don't think there's a big time danger of one of these ladies getting knocked out. So what comes into play then is who's going to control the octagon or who's going to control the cage. And with that said, I think there's a good chance that it's Jessica Ai kind of being the bully here, maybe pinning Chookagian up against the cage a little bit, maybe getting a takedown or two along the way. And if that's the case in a very competitive fight, she might steal this fight. So I'm going to pick Jessica Ai in what I think is a coin flip type of fight. Again, you could say Chookagian has looked a little bit and performed a little bit better overall in her UFC career, and you can't argue that. And this is a very winnable fight for her as well. But I think people are underestimating Jessica Ai in this spot as well. And I think that, you know, I mean, the two fights that she just recently won, I know that in her last fight, it was a very close competitive decision. Another one against, you know, Jessica Rose Clark. And then, of course, before that against Faria as well. So her two wins at 125 pounds have been just like all the rest of her fights, man. It seems like every Jessica Ai fight is a split decision type of fight. So in most cases that is. So I think we're going to see another one here. But with that said, I'm going to go against the public and I'm going to go against the common opinion that Chookagian wins this fight. And I'm going to pick Jessica Ai to get the W here. So go Jessica Ai.
And normally I'm the first guy to say that Nick's being a homer and he's all on Jessica Ai just because, you know, she's from Ohio and everything. But I actually think she has a realistic path to victory here. Yeah, Chookagian is the taller, longer fighter. I think Chookagian is definitely the better striker of the two. She's clearly more durable. Even though Chookagian doesn't have a ton of power, I could see her clipping Ai on the feet and hurting her. But, what's really made Ai, get these victories and get on a little bit of a, build some momentum in the flyweight division has been her dedication to the ground game. Now, she's not an elite wrestler by any means, and she's not an incredible Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist. Chookagian actually has a little bit more jiu-jitsu credentials, at least as far as I know. But, Jessica Ai has been able to, you know, consistently put her opponents on their backs in her fight so far in the flyweight division. And that's something that she was starting to do even at the end of her run in the bantamweight division. So, I mean, you saw she was repeatedly shooting in for takedowns, against, you know, some of the top contenders at 135 pounds. So I think, honestly, that Jessica Ai could, put Chookagian on her back and keep her there and at least win two rounds or do enough to get the judges to side with her in another close split decision type fight, as Nick mentioned, because all Ai's fights are close. If you watch Chookagian on her back, I mean, it is not pretty. I mean, she has, you know, I've heard that she has some pretty legitimate submission credentials, but when she got put on her back by, you know, Liz Carmouche and Lauren Murphy, I mean, she was just kind of flopping around. And I think, you know, there really wasn't a great ability to get back to her feet. There wasn't really much of a submission attempt off of her back. So if Jessica Ai can put Chookagian on her back, she has a good chance of keeping her there. And I think that she's going to surprise some people here. I know Chookagian's favored, and I understand it because, you know, she's higher ranked. She's coming off of a pretty good win over Alexis Davis, somebody that kind of dominated Ai when they fought. I think Ai can shoot for takedowns and put Chookagian on her back and keep her there. So I actually think the underdog gets the job done here. I'm going to side with Jessica Ai. I think she wins probably by decision via lay and pray takedowns. Now, moving up to the lightweight division, we have Olivier Aubin-Mercier, who is 12-3, taking on Gilbert Burns, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Burns opened minus 135, the comeback on Mercier minus 105, and right now over at DSI, it's minus 120 for Mercier. The comeback on Burns is at minus 110, so line flipped a little bit, but there is two action coming in this fight, and it seems like the overall opinion out there is Burns is going to get the W here, despite the line flip and the line change. This is a great fight. I mean, stylistically, what a matchup this is from the UFC. You have two dominant grapplers going at it here, but make no mistake, out of the two grapplers that we have that are high level, that in most cases that you put them on the ground with, you know, a lot of guys in this weight class at 155 pounds, they are going to just dominate, you know, in that world on the ground. But here you have, in my opinion, somebody that has a clear edge, and that's Burns. Even though I respect Aubin-Mercier's ground game, I mean, like I said, in most cases, I think he beats a lot of the lightweights out there and he dominates them on the ground, but he's not going to dominate Gilbert Burns on the ground. That's for sure. And I think Burns is just that much of a special talent when it comes to the jiu-jitsu world. I mean, he's proven that outside of the octagon as well. I mean, this guy is a legit, special, talented, rare breed when it comes to BJJ. So I think Burns can actually finish Aubin-Mercier, despite Aubin-Mercier being very solid on the ground as well. So in my opinion, this is going to probably play out on the feet, because both these guys have capable wrestling, but at the same time, they're not dominant at doing so. So I think they're going to neutralize each other out, and it's going to stay – turn into a stand-up fight with two grapplers. And if that's the case, it'll be close. It'll be competitive, because I think Burns has improved, and I think Burns might be at times have a little bit more of an edge on the feet, but I think Aubin-Mercier continues to improve his stand-up as well. And I think I trust his durability a lot more than I do Burns. I mean, if Mercier gets clipped by a punch from Burns, I know Burns has some punching power, of course, but I think he can take it and he'll absorb it and then he'll keep on going. Whereas Mercier, if he connects and lands on Burns, we've seen Burns, that's one of his kryptonites. That's definitely a concern for Burns, is when he gets clipped in fights. I mean, his chin does not hold up good. He gets dropped. He's a warrior, so he won't quit. That's one thing you got to love about Burns. But at the same time, I just don't trust that durability, because we've seen it just change the complexion of fights for Burns as well. So I've been going back and forth on this fight. It's a very tough fight because, like I said, I think it's going to come down to the stand-up game more than anything else. Because if Mercier tries to get this fight to the ground, even if he's in top, that's a big mistake. He doesn't want to do this. He wants to keep this fight upright and try to win the stand-up battle. Where Burns, I mean, in most cases, like I said, he can stand with Mercier, but he can look for the ground and have some more success there. So I think Burns is going to be the one that's actually looking to make this more of a ground battle, where Mercier is probably going to be able to sprawl and brawl, keep this upright, and maybe outpoint Burns on the feet or even do enough damage that it changes the complexion of this fight as well. So I'll go with the hometown guy here. I mean, like I said, I'm on the fence with it. I could see it going either way. I'm a big fan of Gilbert Burns. I think the guy's a stud, and I wish he had a better resume, or he was a little bit more durable in this spot, because I think the guy has so much talent, man. It's just fun watching him fight. But I mean, matchups are everything, and I think stylistically this is an intriguing matchup, but I'm actually going to side with a more durable fighter in Aubin Mercier, and I think it's going to be a competitive stand-up type of fight, with Aubin Mercier getting the hometown close decision edge.
Yeah, this is a really close fight. I mean, on paper, Aubin Mercier is probably the better striker technically. He pushes a really strong pace. He's improved drastically in his actual striking acumen. I mean, you can watch the development of his stand-up skills from a point where, you know, early in his UFC career, he had a fight where he landed like two strikes in three full rounds. And then it moved on to him actually outstriking Drew Dober and dominating him, a guy that's a pretty decent striker in the lightweight division. So, now, I think the tides have actually turned, and Mercier is a more than above average striker. Gilbert Burns, on the other hand, he had some striking, and then he basically had some issues with his durability, getting clipped against really good strikers. And then, he kind of went back to his roots, started taking people down more. And then more recently, he started knocking people out again on the feet. So I think he kind of fell in love with his striking a little bit. And then that kind of got exposed in his last fight where, you know, he really ran into it. So, both of these guys are coming off of tough losses against some really talented opponents. So, they're both looking to bounce back. Both guys, are really good on the ground as well. I mean, Mercier is a little bit more, wrestling focused, although he definitely does have some submission ability. And Gilbert Burns is an elite, grappler. I mean, this is a guy that, was a grappling coach for one of his gyms, a really good gym. I believe it was the Black Zillion. So, I think if this fight goes to the ground, Gilbert Burns is going to dominate it. While Mercier has had his moments, and especially has, you know, out-grappled several fighters, he's also been in a situation against some elite Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guys like Carlos Diego Ferreira, where he got, you know, exposed a little bit. And I think if Burns can get his hands on Mercier, I think that he can out-grapple him and potentially at least win the round, but potentially submit him. On the feet, I do think Mercier will get the better of Burns. He's also the more durable fighter, so I'm a little concerned about that, but I think Burns also can balance that by having more power with his strikes. So if Mercier gets a little cocky, he could eat a big shot and then find himself on his back and end up getting submitted. So I think at some point, though, Burns does shoot in for takedowns. He does average about 2.2 per fight. His accuracy's about the same as Mercier's, and Mercier doesn't have amazing takedown defense at about 68%. So I think all it really takes is one or two takedowns, and Burns can get the job done and potentially win two rounds here. So I'm going to side with Burns, but I am a little concerned of if this fight stays standing for more than half of it, and I think Mercier could outpoint Burns and win the decision. I think this fight is crazy close, but I'm going to side with the Brazilian, and I'm going to go with Burns. Now, moving on to the headlining bout of the preliminary card, we have Claudia Gadelha, who is 16-3, taking on Nina Ansaroff, who is 9-5, and this is in the women's strawweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Gadelha open minus 380, the comeback and answer off plus 260. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is Gadelha minus 325, the comeback and answer off is at plus 250. So line margins have tightened up. There is two-way action in this fight as well. Man, Gadelha, in my opinion, was the best in this weight class, was the best strawweight as far as pure talent goes, and just her ability to dominate, you know, fights, but her conditioning and the title fights obviously lacked against the young Jacek. That's why she wasn't champion. That's why she's not crowned champion, because her conditioning, her cardio lets her down. But that being said, we've recently saw her also suffer a pretty bad defeat to the hands of Jessica Andrade. And you know what? I mean, that just proves how good Andrade is actually in this weight class. So she's definitely taken a couple steps back from what I thought she was. Like I said, I thought she was the most talented fighter in this weight class, and I thought that she would eventually hold that strap. But again, her conditioning comes into play, and now it seems like she's on a bit of a decline, which is maybe unfair to say, but I don't know. There's something definitely up with her. And this is a tough fight against Ansaroff for Gadelha as well, because I think Ansaroff is only improving. She's getting more confidence fight by fight. We've always known that what she's capable of, and she's a pretty solid out, but she just couldn't get those victories. She couldn't get those W's in the octagon. Well, now she's on a 3-fight win streak over solid competition, and her confidence level is definitely on the rise, and she knows she's capable of doing some good things. And the matchup here against Gadelha, she's going to have to keep this fight upright. That's the only concern for me here. I would actually pick Ansaroff straight out to win this fight because of Gadelha's recent performances. But in my opinion here, Gadelha is going to be able to probably get this fight to the ground, at least in the first round, probably in round two as well. And that alone could lead to a finish or possibly just, you know, winning the scorecards with her as well. Cause I think if Ansaroff is able to stuff the takedowns and keep this fight upright, even though Gadelha is definitely a capable striker in her own right, I think as the fight progresses, Ansaroff is going to be the one doing a little bit more damage and having a little bit more success as well. So this is definitely a tricky fight, because I think it's going to come down to round two. I think round one is going to be Gadelha's. Round two is going to be probably Gadelha. But again, if she starts fading and she starts showing some of her recent flaws, and even in the second round, and Ansaroff makes it a tough fight for her, I could see it being a close round, maybe going to Ansaroff. And then Ansaroff is going to probably more than likely win round three here in this fight. So it's going to be a 29-28 decision win for Gadelha, in my opinion. But it's not one that I could actually trust. And it's unfortunate because, like I said, I thought she was on her way to a title. I thought she was going to be a dominant champion at one point as well, if she could get those conditioning issues in check. But she's, like I said, in my opinion, she looks like she's a declining fighter, and I just can't put my finger on it. I think she's just, it's a head scratcher. I mean, so hopefully she shows up here and she looks back to form, and you know, her conditioning looks good. And I just don't trust it though enough, but I'm going to pick her to win because I think, again, those takedowns are probably going to be enough, maybe even get a stoppage finish. And if not, she probably wins her enough of this fight to get the win. But man, I'm not as confident in Gadelha as I once was. So I would not recommend laying over 3-1 in this fight, because like I said, it's going to probably come down to round two. And if that's the case, you don't want to be laying 3-1 chalk on this fight, because it can easily go against you here. So the pick is Gadelha to win. Not a confident one though.
And I'm in the same boat. I mean, Claudia Gadelha is clearly the better fighter of the two, but she has her flaws. I mean, we've seen Gadelha I think that she's a bit chinny. You saw her get rocked badly against Young Jacek in her fights against her. You saw her most recently, she got rocked against Carla Esparza, of all people, on the feet, which was absolutely shocking to me. I mean, Esparza's striking has improved a little bit, but not in a million years did I think that Gadelha would actually get hurt in that type of fight. If this fight stays standing, Ansaroff, in my opinion, is one of the best stand-up fighters in the women's strawweight division. I think she can hold her own striking against anybody. Young Jacek, if she drops back down, Nama Yunus, you name it. Ansaroff is clearly one of the top two or three strikers in the strawweight division, in my opinion. But, you know, this isn't a kickboxing match. This is an MMA match, and Ansaroff historically has had some issues with people taking her down. You saw that in her UFC debut against Lima. You saw it against Kish. And Claudia Gadelha has some of the best wrestling, takedowns, and overall ground game in the women's strawweight division. She is extremely physically powerful. And just all she has to do is close that distance, get a hold of you, and you're usually going for a ride. The issue with Gadelha is, you know, she has just so much muscle fiber and she just packs so much explosive energy into that little frame that she tires herself out consistently. I mean, just over and over again, she always gasses in fights. Usually in the third round after winning the first two. And that's probably what's going to happen here. Unless she can get a finish. I mean, Claudia Gadelha did finish, Kovalkiewicz with a really quick rear naked choke, just completely dominated her, one of the better fighters in the strawweight division. So it's very possible that Gadelha could take this to the floor and finish Ansaroff, whether it's a ground and pound TKO or a submission. But I think what most likely happens is Gadelha takes Ansaroff down for two straight rounds, convincingly wins the first two rounds, then starts to slow down, and Anzorov probably wins the third, but can't put Gedalia away, and Gedalia wins a decision. So my pick is going to be Claudia Gedalia. Now, kicking off the pay-per-view main card is a light heavyweight contest between Jimmy Manoa, who is 17-4, and Tiago Santos, who is 19-6. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Santos opened minus 185, the comeback on Manoa plus 145. And right now, what we're seeing over at BetDSI is actually minus 190 on Santos, the comeback plus 150 on Manoa. So again, line margins have tightened up. And it looks like there is going to continue to be two-way action on this fight. We're seeing, actually, I think it bumped over to 2-1. Now we're starting to see some action back on Manoa as well at one point. So tough one, man, because I think both of these guys are very talented. Obviously, two of the most devastating strikers in all of the light heavyweight division right now. I mean, Santos has been on an extreme roll. We were just talking about him earlier against Anders, and that performance, man, I'll tell you what, it definitely raised his stock. Because to me, I'm one personally that's never been a really big Thiago Santos fan as far as the, I just don't trust him, man. He's too chinny for me, and he's flawed and defensively flawed, and he shows up sometimes and he looks terrible. Look at the David Branch fight. I mean, David Branch just blew right through him. I mean, look at the Eric Spicely fight. Eric Spicely was able to just blow right through him. Look at the Gegard Mousasi fight. You know, I mean, it's just not what you want to see from a guy that could potentially be a contender, a title contender. I mean, so those spots in my mind stick out way too much for me, for Santos. But then again, he's fighting a guy that's, you know, right now is definitely on a decline of his career, and he's a chinny guy as well. I mean, he got knocked out by Ozdemir. Ozdemir has the type of power that can knock out most, obviously, in this division, and we've seen that time and time again. So, I mean, I get it, but still, I mean, Manoa did get clipped and knocked out by that. He got clipped and knocked out by another devastating hard puncher in Anthony Johnson as well. And you know, so there's definitely some flawed chins here. I mean, you can look back to the Gustafsson fight. So it's basically chin versus chin here, and who lands, I think, the first significant blow that's going to land on the other person's chin is going to probably win his fight. I mean, both of them are definitely, like I said, defensively flawed a little bit, and they're chinny. Conditioning, I think, favors Santos. I think overall versatility on the feet favors Santos. And I think what have you done for me lately favors Santos as well. So even though I'm not that confident, because like I said, I want to believe in Santos. I want to think that this guy is a stud. He's on his way to a potential title shot, because it's fun to watch him strike. When he's on and his durability holds up, I mean, Santos is just such a tough out and such a fun guy to watch fight. But like I said, in my mind, I mean, he's not consistent enough for me, even though he showed a little bit more of that recently. So I'm going to pick Santos to win, because I think he has looked better recently. And I think Manoa was more of a decline fighter, but make no mistake about it. Manoa with one punch can win this fight. I mean, there's no question. So if you're betting this fight again, would you lay 2-1 chalk over Manoa? I don't care if Santos goes out there and knocks him out quick. I mean, more times than not, this is a dangerous spot for both fighters. So if you're going to lay 2-1 on either guy, it's probably not a smart move here with the amount of power that's coming in the other way. So this is probably a dog or pass situation, but another tough one, because I don't like to, you know, to lay my money on Manoa either, because he is, like I said, he's a chinny guy. And I think that Santos does have a lot of advantages in this fight as well. So with all that said, be cautious out there if you're betting this fight, but I am going to pick Santos to win, because I think, like I said, I've been more impressed with what he's shown me lately than Manoa.
Yeah, and I'm going to side with Thiago Santos as well. I've just been so impressed with this guy's technical striking ability. He just mixes it up so well with both his hands and his feet. And he takes on talented fighters, and he just outworks them and outstrikes them consistently. Now, obviously, both of these guys are very chinny. You know, Manoa has been obliterated by powerful strikers in the past, and Santos has in his time in the UFC been caught by guys that, you know, sometimes aren't even that great as strikers. You know, Dave Branch put him away in the middleweight division, which really surprised me. I thought, you know, Branch would, you know, submit him quickly on the ground, and Branch actually TKO'd him from standing. And Santos has been caught before as well. So, you know, that's something that I'm definitely concerned about, because, you know, Manoa hits hard. If he lands anything even half decent, Santos could be in huge trouble. You know, Santos, even though this is at light heavyweight, he's actually an inch taller than Manoa. He's not giving up a ton of reach. And I don't think the reach matters that much, because Santos relies on his kicking game so well. I mean, this guy can just really lay into people with heavy head kicks, body kicks, leg kicks. I think the kicks are going to be the deciding factor in this fight. Santos is just so effective with them, and he just wings them. And unless Manoa is just perfectly checking these and doing some damage to Santos in response from the checks, I think that the leg kicks are going to really chip away at Manoa and set up some kind of shot down the middle that Santos can put Manoa away. But that being said, Manoa is a good athlete with a ridiculous amount of power. And if Santos, you know, lets his guard down or lets anything sneak through, you know, zigs when he should have zagged, and gets caught, absolutely Manoa can win this fight. I mean, this fight's honestly going to boil down to who lands the first really good shot on the other person's chin. Because, when that happens, neither guy really has, the durability to withstand it because both guys hit hard and both guys have bad chins. So, I'm going to side with Santos because I think he's the more technical striker, and I think that there's the better chance that he gets his shot through Manoa's defenses. And I do think, you know, overall, his, at least on paper, Santos throws a little bit more often. He absorbs less strikes, and he has better overall striking defense. But honestly, either of these guys land a good shot, somebody's going down. But I'm going to side with Santos. I think he does get the job done, and I think that the overall better technical striking ability will win out in this contest. But this should be a really fun one, and I do not expect it to go the distance. So Santos is my pick. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Hakeem Dawodu, who is 8-1-1, taking on Kyle Bochniak, who is 8-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Dawodu opens -180. The comeback on Bochniak comes in at +140. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently -170 on Dawodu, and the comeback on Bochniak is at +140. So line margins have tightened up again. Two-way action coming into this fight. This should be a fun fight, man. I mean, Bochniak, if you haven't been a fan of his before the last fight against Zabit, I mean, you are now for sure because he's a warrior. I mean, he went out there and faced one of the best fighters in the weight class and performed a lot better than most people expected. And you know, took some damage, fought through adversity and actually made it a pretty fun fight, especially late in that fight. So Bochniak's the type of fighter, man, that he's a warrior. You know what you're going to get from him. He's going to come forward. He's going to push the pace. He has no fear. He definitely, even from a loss in his last fight, he's gained confidence. He's definitely thinking he belongs in the upper echelon at 145 pounds right now. So mentally, he's a dangerous dude to be in there with right now. Again, and the pace that he pushes and, you know, his aggression and overall stylistic, you know, attributes for him. I mean, he's a pretty well-rounded fighter. He's not going to, you know, go out there and out wrestle everybody. He's not going to go out there and blow you out on the feet either, but he's pretty solid in every area and every aspect of the game. And again, combine that with his toughness that he's shown and just his warrior spirit. He's a tough out. And Dawodu, again, I mean, he's a pretty impressive fighter as well. He's nothing but good highlight reels when you're watching some of his footage out there. I mean, the guy is a devastating striker, a very clean, accurate, powerful striker. He's got good takedown defense. And more times than not, he'll usually end up on top if it does hit the ground as well. So this guy has a lot to like about him. But unfortunately for him, I mean, that Henry fight, when he made his UFC debut that just got, you know, he got finished very quickly in that fight. That's kind of a head scratcher there. And this fight, like I said, I know he bounced back after that and had a pretty solid win over Arnett, but I think stylistically, this is a tough fight for him because Dawodu is going to definitely be landing, and he's going to be the cleaner striker in this spot here. But I think Bochniak's just his ability to push the pace and just never slow down or never, back away or never be afraid. I think that's going to come into play here. And I think as this fight progresses, Bochniak's going to close the distance. So I think early on in this fight, Dawodu is going to be clearly the better striker. But by the time we get down to the third round, I don't think these guys knock each other out here. I think they're both capable enough of, like sustaining the other person's punishment. Even though, like I said, again, Dawodu getting clipped and finished by, Henry there is definitely a head scratcher and something you might want to keep an eye on. I'm not saying he's got a bad chin, but you definitely have to be concerned with that. I think still in this fight here, his chin probably holds up well enough and we probably see it hitting the scorecards. And if that's the case, I think it's going to be a really competitive fight with Bochniak actually probably taking over as the fight goes. So I'm going to go Bochniak's way. Again, I know it's not going to be a very popular opinion because a lot of people like what they see in Dawodu. He's definitely an up-and-coming prospect with great, like I said, great striking and potentially – you know, he could definitely live up to all the hype that he has around him. But I think in this fight, it's just a tough fight. And with the confidence level of Bochniak probably edges it out here. So the pick is Bochniak to get the close decision win.
And I'm going to agree with you. I mean, you look at these guys and Dawodu on, if you just watch them, Dawodu is clearly the better striker of the two. I mean, this guy has such crazy techniques, all different sorts of spinning attacks, kicking, you know, wild, crazy, basically you name it, he can do it. He is a superior athlete. But he needs space, especially for some of those kicking attacks. And Kyle Bochniak does not like to give his opponent space. I mean, you watch that fight against Magomed Sharipov and, Bochniak was absolutely outgunned. He was, you know, not as good as Magomed Sharipov on the feet. He was not as good as him on the ground. And he's just so tenacious and was pushing forward. And even though he was losing that fight, you know, he forced Magomed Sharipov to break away from that technical, style that he likes to have where he can just destroy anybody at will. And he forced Magomed Sharipov to stand and bang with him. And Kyle Bochniak has a chin on him. So, if he can force Dawodu into a brawl when he wants to create distance and use his technique and, fight like a smart kickboxer should, then I think Dawodu's in huge, huge trouble here. Especially after Dawodu lost that UFC debut where, you know, he took on somebody that, was able to kind of withstand his attack and put a lot of pressure on him and land a big shot and put him away. So, while Bochniak doesn't have like ridiculous power, I mean, he swings for the fences and that style is the reason he's on the main card here. I mean, he is exciting when he is aggressive and, I think that he's going to be pushing forward like an absolute crazy person in this fight, putting a ton of pressure on Dawodu. And there's just, unless Dawodu is just on his bicycle like crazy in this fight, just repeatedly trying to create space, I think he's going to have a big time problem finding those openings to land those stylish attacks that he likes to throw. I mean, Bochniak is just going to be in his grill, throwing haymakers, biting down on his mouthpiece and pushing forward. And that's just the Bochniak style. I mean, he can be very entertaining. And, if Dawodu gets forced into that type of fight, I just don't think he can endure it. Even though he is the better striker of the two, if he gets suckered into a brawl, he's going to lose that. He doesn't have the durability. And I think at some point, Bochniak might even be able to put him away if he can crack him on the chin. So if Dawodu does not get space to operate, I think he's going to lose this fight. So I can see Kyle Bochniak either winning a decision or potentially even putting Dawodu away. But if Bochniak sits back and lets Dawodu do his thing, Bochniak is going to lose, hands down. But I just don't think he's going to do that. So my pick is going to be Kyle Bochniak. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Alex Oliveira, who is 19-4-1 with two no contests, taking on Gunnar Nelson, who is 16-3-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Minus 120 Nelson, minus 120 Oliveira. Pick 'em fight exactly at open, which in my opinion is absolutely insane. And right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 140 for Nelson and the comeback on Oliveira at plus 110. Line margins have tightened up a little bit and you're seeing a little bit more action coming on Nelson. Not nearly what I thought would coming on Nelson. A lot of people I think are skeptical now. I mean, Gunnar Nelson got knocked out. I know, you know, he had his time off injuries. So a lot of speculation out there that Gunnar is just maybe not in a good state. But I mean, if you look at how ripped he is in his photos and with the healing and all the interviews or whatnot that you've seen, I think he's going to come into this fight and be just fine, honestly. So I don't think there's going to be a big concern. And again, in his last matchup, I realized that he got knocked out and caught by Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio is obviously a stud in his own right. I mean, he's honestly fighting on another level right now you know, in the welterweight division. So stylistically, that was just a tough matchup, I guess, obviously for Gunnar Nelson. Now, if they ran that back, it'd be interesting. I know that, you know, again, it possibly could happen to be a repeat again, but I just think it was one of those situations that Gunnar Nelson, of course, he doesn't have the greatest defense standing up. I mean, he's definitely hittable at times, but I think it was, I don't want to say it was a fluke because Ponzinibbio does that to a lot of people, but I think that Gunnar Nelson could probably fare better in most cases. And that was, you know, like I said, kind of a bad loss on his resume. On the other hand, Oliveira's looked pretty good. I mean, the guy is definitely a well-rounded fighter. He's a finisher. I mean, especially on the feet lately. I know he's got his submissions as well. I mean, recently he just choked out Carlos Condit, but I'm talking about his win over Peter Sahli, his win over LaFleur recently as well. I mean, he's displaying some of that knockout ability as well. And I think a lot of people are basically thinking that, if, you know, if Gunnar Nelson can't get this fight to the ground, he's in a lot of trouble on the feet. I don't think that's the case. I think even on the feet here, I mean, if you look at Oliveira, he's definitely, you know, capable of getting blasted on the feet in his own right as well. I mean, his strike defense isn't exactly great in his own right. Offensively, again, the guy is definitely a threat and you have to respect what he dishes out, but defensively he's hittable as well. And like I said, I think this is actually going to be a very competitive fight. I think Nelson might have even more one punch knockout power than Oliveira, especially with his hands. So this is going to be a competitive fight regardless of where it takes place. But I should say, make it a little bit more clear. That's not exactly accurate because on the floor, there's a big discrepancy and Nelson has a huge advantage over Oliveira. I don't care how good Oliveira is on the ground as far as getting submission wins over, you know, so-so kind of fighters on the ground. Against Nelson, he's going to be a fish out of water. Nelson has a dominant grappling game. He is a marquee, high level. We're talking about Burns earlier. I mean, you could put Nelson in the same category as far as just special jiu-jitsu skills. And I think Gunnar Nelson's takedown ability is actually a little bit underrated as well. What I do think in this fight and how it plays out is even if they stand up, obviously they're going to have to start off striking a little bit. Nelson will be just fine. He eventually will get the takedown against Oliveira. And once he gets a takedown, it's going to be quick work. I mean, Oliveira is not going to survive against Gunnar Nelson on the ground. So that's why I think this is insane that he'd even open a pick-em up. I can't believe the recency factor. I mean, people are looking at Gunnar Nelson again, coming off a loss with his time off, and they're basically thinking, ah, this guy's nothing. This guy, in my opinion, is one of the best welterweights on the roster and will continue to prove that as well. So don't just, you know, give up on Nelson at this point. In fact, I think a lot of people are going to jump back on the Gunnar Nelson bandwagon after he gets an impressive finish over Oliveira in this spot here as well. So that's why I'm scratching my head at this line because, I mean, before that knockout loss, this line would be significantly higher against Oliveira, despite Oliveira looking pretty good and it just being a tough out. I mean, Oliveira, make no mistake about it. I'm not saying he's an easy, you know, win here for Nelson. I think Oliveira definitely presents some problems. He's a strong guy. He's big for the weight class. Again, he's got the potential to possibly catch Nelson on the feet and finish him. I get it, but I still think people are underestimating Nelson. And as far as value goes, there's all sorts of value still left on Nelson. This line is going to continue to increase and climb, I think, in my opinion. But if not, you know, I would definitely recommend taking a stab at Gunnar Nelson at this spot because I think more times than not, he gets a W here. So there's value still left, like I said. So the pick and a play should be made on Gunnar Nelson, and that's the way I'm going to go with it.
Yeah, the thing that really stands out if you look at Alex Oliveira's record is when he faced some guys with ridiculous Brazilian jiu-jitsu credentials, really top-notch submission grapplers in the UFC, he got submitted. When he faced Gilbert Burns, he was getting the better of Burns on the feet, but then second that fight went to the floor, Burns ended up getting a submission victory. And I think that was in Oliveira's UFC debut, so let's give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. But then, you know, Alex Oliveira faces Donald Cerrone. Boom. Fight goes to the floor, Cerrone wraps him up, chokes him out. So, you know, that's two times that Oliveira has gone to the ground against talented grapplers, and he has just absolutely been overwhelmed. Now, Oliveira does actually have some submission skill himself, some wrestling. He's used that to beat some pretty talented fighters. But if this fight goes to the floor, Gunnar Nelson is probably the best submission grappler he's faced yet. Plus, you know, Nelson is basically a bigger version of Gilbert Burns with a little bit more speed. I would say Nelson's the better striker than Gilbert Burns too. So I think Nelson can hold his own with Oliveira on the feet. And then the second this fight hits the canvas, Oliveira is going to be in a world of hurt. I mean, Gunnar Nelson can just tie this guy in knots. You know, the only person that Gunnar Nelson has ever had any trouble with on the ground was Demian Maia. And even in that fight, Nelson was holding his own for a round. So, basically, unless Alex Oliveira can take Gunnar Nelson out quickly, I just don't see how he wins. And the only person that's been able to take Gunnar Nelson out was Santiago Ponzinibbio, and he is basically a top two or three welterweight in the world right now. So, and I just don't see Alex Oliveira as at quite that level. He doesn't have the technique of Ponzinibbio. He doesn't quite have the power of Ponzinibbio. He doesn't have the the conditioning, the pace. So, I don't think that he has, the ability to stay upright like Ponzinibbio with the takedown defense. So the second Nelson sees an opening, I think that he does take this to the floor. And I think Nelson might even be able to crack him on the feet and potentially force it to the floor with a knockdown or something like he's done in the past. So I do think this is a big time bounce back fight for Gunnar Nelson. He's been out for a while. I'm not that concerned about ring rust with how just absolutely jacked he looks. If you've been watching any of the promotional content for this upcoming event, I think Gunnar Nelson is more than ready to bounce back and answer his critics. And I think Alex Oliveira is the perfect opportunity to get not just an impressive win, but an absolute dominant win over a tough ranked opponent in the welterweight division. So I'm siding with Gunnar Nelson. I think that he doesn't just win, but he puts Oliveira away in absolute dominant fashion. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening in the flyweight division, we have a battle for the women's flyweight title between challengers Valentina Shevchenko, who is 15-3, and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, the former strawweight champion, who is 15-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Looking over at our UFC 231 opening odds reactions, we have it listed as Shevchenko opens -260, the comeback on Jędrzejczyk at +180. So there's some openers that were put out for a while here that might be a little bit different or whatnot as well. But again, check out the UFC 231 opening odds reactions from Adam Martin on our site. That's what we're going by for this fight. So -260, +180. And then right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is actually Shevchenko at -340. The comeback is +260 on Jędrzejczyk. So line margins have tightened up. And again, more action coming in Shevchenko's way. Early on when the line got posted, I heard a lot of people saying, oh, that line's ridiculous. And Jędrzejczyk is, definitely better and deserving to be closer, like as far as the line goes. But now we're not seeing that as far as the betting window goes. And I understand it. I mean, honestly, in my opinion, I've said it time and time again. I think Shevchenko is the best female on the UFC roster. I understand that she's, you know, had some setbacks. She's had some losses, in a higher weight class. Let's not forget that. So she, you know, at 135 pounds, which she's been a little bit undersized throughout her career. And that's why this 125 pound division is definitely a sight for sore eyes for a lot of these women. But against Nunes, a couple times actually, you know, her getting beat, I get it. But Nunes again is a very dominant champion at 135 pounds, and those fights were very close with Nunes as well. So outside of that, I mean, that was basically her only setbacks. I mean, I know the Holly Holm fight was very close as well. And I still think that again, I mean, pound for pound ability, Shevchenko is known for her striking, right? But she is way above and beyond that. We've seen that recently as well. She has the ability to wrestle. Underrated wrestling, really. And she has the ability to finish fights with her jiu-jitsu skills on the ground. So she is a complete fighter. That's why I think pound for pound, in my opinion, she is the best female on the roster. Just skill set, amazing, really. I mean, she's a special talented fighter. Now, of course, I'm not going to, you know, count out Jędrzejczyk here, because Jędrzejczyk is definitely, I mean, she was a dominant champion. I mean, there's no question about that. 115 pounds. A lot of people didn't think she was going to lose. They thought she would hold the title and reign for a long time. But unfortunately for her, she ran into just a bad stylistic matchup in Rose Namajunas. And, you know, she suffered a couple losses there and got her strap taken. And now she's getting another opportunity in a weight class above with a rival that she's had a lot of experience with. Let's not forget, Shevchenko and Jędrzejczyk also have had, and most of you guys know, they've had battles in kickboxing, and Shevchenko is 3-0. If you watch some of those fights though, that, you know, their kickboxing matchups, I mean, this is a different world. This is MMA. I know they're going to, you know, stand and bang or whatnot. And Shevchenko definitely had the edge in her kickboxing matches, but she also had the edge because she was taking her down quite a bit in those fights with those trip takedowns. So it's, you know, like I said, you almost have to throw those out the window, but I mean, take something from it. And I realize Shevchenko is a little bit better. Again, I think she's a little bit better overall. She's a little bit more diverse on the feet, but Jędrzejczyk pushes a heck of a pace. And, you know, I think her aggressiveness and her ability to push forward will give a lot of problems to a lot of people, but I think Shevchenko is going to deal with it. Okay. She's going to probably look to take this fight to the ground a few times along the way. And on the ground, I think she has a significant edge over Jędrzejczyk as well. So I just think regardless of where this fight plays out, whether it hits a scorecard, Shevchenko probably wins on the scorecards. Whether You know, if this fight ends inside the distance, I don't see Jacek finishing Shevchenko, but I do think there's a possibility Shevchenko finishes Jacek too. So I do think Shevchenko is just a better fighter here. I think she's going to be physically stronger. So there's a lot to like about her in this matchup. So I am going to pick her to win. Now, as far as the bet goes, man, with the state of MMA judging, we say it time and time again, I think this will be a competitive fight. So if it does hit the scorecards, I mean, Jacek's going to have her moments for sure in this fight. So I don't know if I would lay the price where it is now, but if it does drop down below 3-1 and it starts, you know, kind of going the other way, then there's definitely going to be some value open up on Shevchenko for sure, with no doubt. So the pick, and it's a pretty confident one. I'd be surprised if Shevchenko loses this fight to Jacek. I mean, like I said, all due respect to Jacek, but I just think Shevchenko is just a level above most. So I'm going to pick her to win and crown, you know, the new first, whatever you want to call it. I realize that, you know, there's been a lot of controversy at 125 pounds, but I think Shevchenko has been the rightful champion all along, and she will continue to prove that. And she deserved this spot and she deserves the belt. So the pick is Shevchenko to get the W over Jacek.
Yeah. And I'm with Nick here. You know, Shevchenko is one of the best strikers in all of the UFC for the women. She held her own with Nunes on the feet. She outstruck Holly Holm, a former world champion boxer who has gone on and, you know, Holm even went on and held her own against Cyborg at 145, but, Shevchenko actually clearly got the better of her at 135. Shevchenko has just been so dominant. And then we always knew that when she dropped down to 125, that was really where she was going to shine. Even though she beat just everybody except Nunes at 135, she was always undersized. And now she's dropping down to 125. She looked amazing in the debut, clearly overpowered and overwhelmed her opponent. Absolutely deserved to be the fighting for the belt. And now she's taking on somebody in Young Jacek that is somebody that normally has the size and reach advantage over just about anybody she fights. And Shevchenko is actually just about the same size as her. So Shevchenko is fighting people her own size, and she's going to be able to mix it up, I think, really well. She has good power in her hands, great technique. She just is able to smoothly counter. I mean, even with spinning, there was a moment against Holm that Holm threw like a lazy jab, and Shevchenko like ducked underneath it and threw a spinning back fist and clipped her right on the chin. I mean, she is just able to do these amazing things in her fights. And I think Young Jacek, even though Young Jacek is excellent and terrific use of distance and is able to usually keep aggressive fighters at bay, I just don't think that she'll be able to do that against Shevchenko. Plus, you factor in Shevchenko's ground game, where she is just consistently able to close the distance, put people on their back, and just beat the tar out of them on the canvas, whether it's ground and pound, submissions. She is just so uniquely talented. I just don't think Young Jacek is going to be able to hang in there. You know, Young Jacek's coming off of the losses, you're losing 2 out of 3 to of her last fights, both to Nama Yunus. And I think Shevchenko's a better striker than Nama Yunus with a little bit more power. And, you know, Young Jacek does have a little bit of the chin concerns. Maybe that's not quite as bad moving up in weight class. She's not having to cut as much weight. Maybe that'll actually help. But, you know, Shevchenko has already beat her 3 times in kickboxing. And that's the one area Young Jacek has her biggest strength in MMA. So I think Shevchenko can beat her if it stays standing for all 5 rounds. But, I mean, if this goes to the ground, I think Shevchenko could put her away. So my pick is going to be Shevchenko. I think she gets the job done. I understand why she's the favorite. She deserves to be the favorite. And I think that when this is all said and done, she's going to be the UFC women's flyweight champion. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening in the featherweight division, we have champion Max Holloway, who is 19-3, taking on Brian Ortega, who is 14-0 with 1 no contest. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Holloway opened minus 140, even money on Ortega. Again, this line kind of came out twice. So early on, I believe it was minus 170. An article on ESPN as well was published, and it's on MMA Oddsbreaker. I believe it's even in my Twitter handle where I opened it like minus 170 for Holloway, the comeback like plus 140 or so on Ortega. But, and the funny thing is, I mean, side note, the line actually escalated to over 2-1 at that point. And, now since it got relined after, you know, the changes in the delays and, unfortunately for Holloway, that, you know, the concussion-like syndrome or symptoms that he was suffering last time, and they had to cancel the fight. The line reopened around minus 140 for Holloway, and the line has flipped because right now what you're seeing over at BetDSI is minus 120 for Ortega, the comeback on Holloway at minus 110. So I'm a little bit surprised because, like I said, we saw a lot of people actually backing Holloway thinking, oh, my God, what an easy price, because Holloway has looked so good overall recently. And, you know, he deserves to obviously be the featherweight champion. The guy is a special talent, just an amazing warrior, having back-to-back wins over Jose Aldo, the, you know, the dominant, most capable or the best fighter at the featherweight division period ever of all time, Jose Aldo. There's no question about that. And Holloway beats him back-to-back fights, even though he is declining. I get it. Aldo is definitely on the decline. He bounced back with a nice win, don't get me wrong, but still, I mean, he's not the fighter he once was, and Holloway is on the rise. So getting that W for Holloway, and then, of course, destroying Pettis like he did in that fight, he just has shown that he's only improving. He's only getting better mentally, physically, everything about Holloway. You got to love. And a lot of it is because of the pace the guy puts on you. I mean, he definitely has a special skill set on the feet. The guy's a talented striker, pushes a high pace, has the ability to keep the fight upright in most cases, excellent takedown defense, has submission skill as well. He's just a complete fighter as well, with the highlight being his durability, his conditioning, and his just fight IQ overall. Holloway is just a smart fighter, so I get it. A lot to respect about him. But Ortega, on the other hand, man, I tell you, I've been nothing but impressed with him. I mean, and through his run so far in the UFC, there's been a lot of times where you see Ortega, especially on the feet, and you're thinking to yourself, he could be a little bit better, or he's getting outstruck in this spot on the feet as well. But then the guy always manages to pull off the W, whether it's by submission, whether it's by a knockout over Frankie Edgar. A lot of people didn't think he was going to win that fight. Stylistically, it was a tough matchup for him, and he came out there and knocked Edgar out. So Ortega is the type of fighter that I think continues to get better fight by fight as well. And now his confidence is definitely at an all-time high. And I think what you're seeing in him is obviously he's more than capable of submitting most opponents on the ground, but now you're seeing a new aspect to his game. He's a dangerous fighter on the feet as well. If you look back, even as recently as the Moicano win, he was losing that fight early on. I mean, I was actually on Moicano against Ortega in that fight, and I was sweating a little bit. I mean, the first couple rounds were definitely Moicano's rounds, but they were close. And what I took from that fight was that Ortega's striking had improved drastically. I mean, he was actually standing there and holding his own against Moicano on the feet. And then, of course, he ended up getting the finish in that third round by submission, which was, I mean, just a beautiful sub. And that's not even a shocker when it comes to Ortega these days, because that's what he does best. But what I'm trying to say is his improvement on the feet is something to watch out for. A lot of people can go back to the Guida fight and say, hey, man, he wasn't doing so well against Guida on the feet, and Guida's no striker. Yes, but if you look at the improvements and the adjustments he's made in his game, Ortega continues to get better on the feet. And again, style matchups are everything. So I actually think here on the feet, a lot of people are going to be surprised that even if Ortega does not get this fight to the ground, he's going to hold his own against Holloway, even on the feet. It's going to be a competitive matchup standing. I think Ortega is actually the harder puncher on the feet as well. And from what we've seen from Holloway, I mean, like I said, the concussion-like symptoms that he recently had and a lot of the rumors floating around, I mean, again, none of that might matter. I mean, Holloway, maybe that's overinflated. I mean, maybe we're all talking about that too much, but I think that's definitely impacted the line some. And more so, I mean, I think it does make me consider, you know, or scratch my head about Holloway a little bit and worry about that aspect of things. And Ortega, his improvement level on the feet and his ability to deliver some pretty hard punches could come into play here, man. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see Ortega clipping Holloway, which Holloway's a very durable fighter. I know that. Again, he's a warrior. He's good defensively as well. But like I said, I think the harder punches are actually going to come from Ortega in this spot. And then one mistake along the way from Holloway could end it for Ortega as well. So I think if it hits the scorecards and we see it go all five rounds, then common sense says Holloway should edge this out by outpointing Ortega, right? And I don't necessarily disagree with that. And I know there's a lot of respectable and solid opinions right now that are picking Holloway, especially with the line flip. And I get it. I mean, again, you got to take your hat off to a lot of people that are picking him. I mean, that's cool. That's fine. I get it. I understand it. But that being said, I think one mistake again along the way in five rounds where Holloway gets his neck caught in something or gets an arm or a limb caught in something. Even if Ortega can't get him to the floor, he finds a way. He's opportunistic with the submission ability. Look at the Cub Swanson fight. I mean, that Cub Swanson fight, that guillotine choke was an all-time classic, and his adjustment in midair was amazing. So Ortega's just on a different level. He's a special type of submission artist as well when it comes to just snagging up a limb or snatching up a neck. And again, I said he's opportunistic because he is just that. So I think this is going to be a great fight for Ortega, a great fight from Holloway as well. We're going to see an all-time classic battle. It'll be a war, but eventually I think Ortega is going to find his spot, and whether it's getting that submission or whether it's landing a hard shot and then jumping on Holloway's back, I think Ortega is going to probably get the W here. So I think we're going to see a new champion get crowned. I don't think it's all hype, and I don't think it's unjustified. I mean, I think Ortega is definitely improving to the point where he's legit, man, and I think he's going to get a heck of a win over Holloway here, and he's going to really open up some eyes. I mean, confidence level right now for Ortega is at an all-time high as well. So there's a lot to like about him going into this fight. Again, I know a lot of people are picking the other way despite the line move, but I think the line move is probably accurate in this case, and I'm going to go with Ortega to get the win here.
And I'm going to sound crazy here because I have been one of the biggest Brian Ortega haters, at least in terms of how I view how he performs inside the octagon, since he's been fighting. I mean, the guy time and time and time again loses and loses and loses and then gets a finish. I heard somebody say that, you know, he might not have actually won a round yet in his UFC career. And they might be right. I mean, you seriously look at Brian Ortega's track record and, you know, Thiago Tavares, you know, maybe he was winning that and then ended up, you know, getting a TKO. You know, Diego Brando, he was losing that fight, gets a third round triangle choke. Clay Guida losing that fight, gets a knockout with 20 seconds to go. You know, he was taking on Moicano. He was losing that fight. Moicano shoots for a takedown in the third round and gets guillotine choked. Cub Swanson, he lost the first round. Second round, he submits him. And then Frankie Edgar. Edgar technically was winning the first round, but then Ortega made a nice little adjustment, caught him with a huge shot, ends up putting away Edgar for the first time. So, you know, it is kind of crazy, but maybe he has not yet won a round in his UFC career, but he's still undefeated because he's finished every single person he's faced in the UFC. And that's almost hilarious because, you know, before he was in the UFC, he wasn't really that much of a finisher. I mean, he had, I think, four decisions, some of them, you know, close decisions outside the UFC. And this guy just keeps getting better and better and better and better, even though they're throwing him against tougher and tougher and tougher opponents. And then eventually top contenders like Moicano, Swanson, Edgar, and he's just still putting these guys away. So I've gained just a lot of respect for him that he's able to adapt and evolve, and now he's showing some power on the feet. And, you know, he's more than just a one-trick pony with the submission ability. So, you know, this is a guy that you just cannot leave even the slightest opening against because he will finish you. You know, Max Holloway is far and away the better striker of the two. I mean, this guy has just lit up some amazing fighters over the course of his career, most notably, you know, Jose Aldo, who clearly is still a great fighter because of what he just did to Jeremy Stephens. You know, Max Holloway made Jose Aldo look silly in their two fights. And so Brian Ortega is going to have his hands full here. You know, Max Holloway is a master technician on the feet. He pushes an intense high pace. He wears people down and then turns it on and then puts people away. I mean, just time and time and time again, that's what he does. I mean, it's, you can almost set your clock to it that he's going to end up wearing somebody down by the second or third round and then getting the finish. So, if Ortega is, you know, not aggressive, if he's not opportunistic, I mean, he's going to eat a lot of shots and he could just get completely overwhelmed and dominated in this fight. But, you know, Max Holloway's shown some, you know, some cracks as well, even though he's on this tremendous streak and he's been so dominant. You know, the fact that he had to drop out, that he's had some of the issues with concussions, that, you know, he's slurring his words, you know, there could definitely be, something there that, you know, if he loses a step inside that cage, if he's not able to get out of the way when Ortega's throwing some serious heavy leather and Ortega hits hard enough that he can put anybody away. You saw that with what he did to Frankie Edgar. I mean, Edgar has been hit by a lot of people hard in his career and he always gets back up, and he could not get back up when Brian Ortega hit him. So, you know, Max Holloway cannot afford to eat that huge shot from Brian Ortega. Max Holloway cannot afford to be put on his back by Brian Ortega. I mean, if this fight goes to the ground, Brian Ortega is going to finish it. He is just that efficient with his elite Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu submission game. So, with some of these kind of chinks in the armor of Max Holloway, with the fact that Brian Ortega, for some reason, is just able to lose until he wins, I actually think that there's going to be a moment in this fight where Max Holloway makes a mistake and Brian Ortega connects and Brian Ortega puts him away. So my pick is going to be Brian Ortega. Now, I could be completely off base here, and then this is finally the fight where everything I've been saying about Brian Ortega and all the previous podcasts and breakdowns, it comes to fruition and Ortega gets exposed and dominated, and I look like a complete idiot for finally picking him and being wrong. But I really do think at some point in this fight, Ortega is going to either land that huge shot or he's going to get Holloway on his back and put him away. So I think at the end of the night, the new UFC champion is going to be Brian Ortega. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 231. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of a free bet via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to a free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.